This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Bob Eckstein, and he just loves museums, and it's contagious. I just love it. And Bob's book is called Footnotes from the Most Fascinating Museums. Hey, Bob, I noticed you wrote about the AFTEL Archive of Curious Scents.
Yeah.
A chance to actually learn about things that smell differently. I went to a cocktail museum in Amsterdam that challenges you to identify the different bouquets of the different cocktails, I guess you'd call it. And I was surprised at how lousy my nose was at identifying, the flavors through the scents. And that was an exercise for me that was really great. And there's just all sorts of creative examples these days. You wrote about also the Mob Museum that has an actual speakeasy for the cafe.
Yeah, it's a legal one. You could go at the end of the museum, you could treat yourself for getting through all the different graphic violence you had to sit through. And that museum was haunted. And I wrote about how the different people who worked there have been affected by the ghosts in the museum.
I love it. I just love that sort of thing. Also, you listed the Mark Twain House in Hartford, Connecticut.
It's amazing.
How so?
Well, first of all, you're in the house of someone who is a genius. So you're learning about someone, but then you get a chance to see how he lives and how his whole lifestyle is individual. This house is a one-of-a-kind house that I can't put to words. Just go, because you won't regret it, and you'll come away also inspired.
Also, I was very curious to see which museums made the cut, and I'm glad Graceland made the cut, Elvis's home in Memphis.
That's another example of an individual's home, one-of-a-kind life that is iconic to our history. He is a part of our American history.
And it's well displayed. So, I mean, that's cool. Another dimension of your book, Bob, is apart from the classic national must-sees, were the quirky museums. You've got the Neon Museum in Las Vegas, and in your book, you took us to the Spam Museum. Tell us about that.
Spam's a tough one. It's a tough one for me, who's a finicky eater, but I do have a Spam story. I have a little personal story for all these museums, and I'm going to share the Spam Museum.
Okay.
I have a friend who didn't know about the Spam Museum, even though he was on Monty Python, and there's a room dedicated to the Spam sketch in Monty Python. I happen to be friends with Michael Palin, and I was talking to Michael about this museum and stuff, and at one point he said, I missed your email about this. Somehow I didn't see it. And I said, check your spam folder. And that's exactly where it was.
Oh, that's good. I bet he enjoyed that. Bob, I noticed in your book that, of course, it's dominated by museums in the United States, but you've also got three museums from Mexico City. And each of those museums, I just think are marvelous. Tell us about why you included Mexico City.
Oh, for one reason, I love painting those museums. They have beautiful museums. And to paint that castle in Mexico City, well, that was one of the highlights of doing the book.
You know, that painting that you did is one of the most memorable pages in the entire book. And it's funny that you brought that up. I just really was struck by that. And the National Museum of Anthropology is a great example of when you go to a capital city, you've got an opportunity to see the culture curated for you in a museum before you get out and visit the rest of that culture and get your fingers dirty in it. And it lets you get more out of the travel experience. And you certainly get that in Mexico City when you go to the National Museum of Anthropology.
Yes. I think that some of those museums are owned by some of the richest people in the world. As a matter of fact, the one museum, slipped my mind, in Mexico City, and which is owned by the person who also owns a majority of the New York Times.
But that's why I want to finish our discussion with just the financial reality of museums, because a lot of museums, they cannot exist on tickets alone, and either they need benefactors or they need to be just owned by some rich person who's got a passion for this. And I know that because I'm friends of the guy who runs the Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas, and it's the project of the Walton family, and they've got all the money in the world, and they have to charge a little bit just so people take the entry seriously, but they really don't have any financial problems. I would imagine the Getty Museum in Los Angeles is in pretty good shape. I would imagine the Seattle Museum of Pop Culture which is owned by the estate of Paul Allen, would be in pretty solid footing financially. What is your insight into the financial struggles and realities of museums and how we factor in as customers?
You bring up a very good point. A lot of these museums that you mentioned, though, you would think had no financial worries, like the Getty Center, actually do have challenges for different reasons. It's very competitive. They have to come up with creative ways to stay afloat. And you see different ways in which they are struggling by having to do more closures and not being open as much. And they sometimes help themselves by having to sell off parts of their work. When you were talking about Europe, people understand the importance of what it means to just not even have art for ourselves, but for children growing up. That's how you cultivate the children to understand and appreciate it.